the ring is evil. It will corrupt and destroy anyone who wears it. What will you do with the One Ring, Frodo?
The Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkien's acclaimed fantasy adventure, comes to life on Blu-ray and DVD.
They must send the ring to Mount Doom.
I will take the burden.
The ring started a war.
Our time is at hand.
Created new enemies.
Where is it, Gandalf?
And united good friends.
It is time to gather together.
We're going with you, Frodo.
Now the journey of the ring has led here.
A new age is upon us.
Ralph Bakshi's animated epic rises to new heights on an all-new deluxe edition DVD, including a look at the groundbreaking techniques that made it a masterpiece of animation.
If we lose Frodo, we lose Middle-earth.
The war has begun.
It's too great a matter for me.
Give it to Smeagol.
One ring to rule them all. One ring to find them. One ring to bring them all. And in the darkness, bind them.
Buy The Lord of the Rings on Blu-ray Combo Pack.
Listener discretion is advised.
It's a Jacked Up Review Show. It's a Jacked Up Review Show. Jacked Up Review Show. It's a Jacked Up.
Soli, we got JJ and Tom in the house once more.
Hello.
Hello.
How do you do?
We got the animation hour. We've talked to death about everything Lord of the Rings, the books, and the various movies, and currently the Rings of Power show. Plenty to like, plenty to not like. But it's time to actually kind of talk about the OG, the one that started the whole transition of saying, hey, we can be an epic scale cartoon, as well as show how to adapt complex best-selling novel by J.R.R. Tolkien. So it all began in 77 when NBC acquired Rankin-Bass, best known for all the, you know, classic Christmas specials, to do 2D cartoon animation on The Hobbit, and later in 1980 for ABC TV. The Return of the King. It featured TV persona Orson Bean as Bilbo and Frodo Baggins. It featured director and actor John Huston as Gandalf. It had TV and DJ persona Casey Kasem as Merry. It had Hanna-Barbera regular Scooby-Doo himself, Don Messick, in various roles, including The Mouth of Sauron and Theoden. Roddy McDowall, that's right, from Planet of the Apes, as Samwise Gamgee.
Theodore Pakel as Aragorn.
Yes, Pakel. And it also featured UK regular John Stevenson as Lord of Nazgul, and Paul Fares, best known for his Disney contributions. That's, you might also know him as Boris from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
He portrayed the various orcs.
And Richard Boone as Smaug, the dragon.
Yes, Richard Boone from Have Gun Will Travel played the very creepy sounding Smaug.
And he looked like a dragon.
And in the middle of that, in that whole confusion of where the rights were going to, Ralph Bakshi, you know, when he was making all the sword and sorcery original animations in edgy X-rated, you know, Fritz the Cat, he decided to make his version of Lord of the Rings, which adapted the first book, Fellowship of the Ring, as well as the first portion of The Two Towers. And despite not connecting with all audiences, it got some good reviews. It made a shit ton of money back. $4 million and made $30.5 million back in 70s dollars. And was a big inspiration for Peter Jackson when he did his version. It did the rare utilization of using actual stunt people and show some of the evil men on screen, as well as make the larger than life personas that would later be animated. Little known fact, Terry Leonard, one of the Indiana Jones stunt doubles, who later, you know, coordinated and second unit directed blockbusters like Apocalypse Now and Die Hard with a Vengeance was also doing providing stunts. A lot of the UK actors won't ring a bell, but for those who don't know, Anthony Daniels, C-3PO himself, portrayed the voice of Legolas, and John Hurt, a year before Alien, portrayed Aragorn.
And there sits our quest. We had to bring a wizard at all. Perhaps it should have been his friend Aruman. Be still, Boromir.
Why? There are other ways to turn if our wizard's balked.
I said from the beginning.
Gandalf, you old fool.
So all you had to do was say, friend, and enter.
Those were happier times.
The story of getting the Lord of the Rings movies actually goes back to the 60s.
Yeah.
Because it had been a hot property.
They knew they wanted to adapt it.
They wanted to adapt it.
Yeah.
And there have been rumors going around Disney was going to do it. Because they were, you know, they were looking for something to do and that fell through. The big rumor was the Beatles were actually going to be in the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
A movie.
George Hamilton provided some funding, but he had nothing better to do outside of funding Life of Brian.
What happened was that it was going to be a setup that the four Beatles were going to play the roles. So Paul would have been Frodo. Ringo would have been Samwise. John would have been Gollum, and George Harrison would have been Gandalf. And it kind of fell through.
I actually would have liked to have seen George as the voice of Gandalf.
I would love to have seen that, but what happened was that it fell through. So it was kind of like in limbo for a while till Saul Zantz came along and picked the rights up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul Zantz, if anybody knows, was the guy who had Fantasy Records. And yes. Fantasy Records was the home of Creedence Clearwater Revival, Vince Guaraldi. Yeah. It was a jazz label. And
they would sell the soundtrack as part of the hustle.
Yeah. And what he did was he actually had just won the Oscar for producing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, yes. Zines, yeah. He had done a lot of Milos Forman's movies. And this was a rare animated venture for him.
So what happened was that Ralph Bakshi is now coming in. He's done Fritz the Cat. I think he had just done Coonskin. And maybe he was doing Wizards and something else.
Right. He was already... so he had experience and his movies were kind of hit and miss in terms of generating profits. Yeah. But this was his last ploy. He needed this. It's interesting seeing how... I did not know when doing research today that John Borman, you know, was attached. Later, took his ideas to make Excalibur.
And the thing is that he'd done Fritz the Cat. He'd done Coonskin, Heavy Traffic, and I think that was it. Oh, and he'd done Wizards.
Wizards
was just before that. So he does Lord of the Rings. And the thing is that his take on it is, I think, almost like he said, the first book, it kind of goes nowhere. The second book, we got to have everything kind of jump in. So why don't I just smush them together? Meanwhile, you got Rankin Bass doing the other stuff, you know, on their end. And, you know, I think they were both kind of like, you know,
they were already arguing over who got to adapt what. And at the end of the day, I mean, they all have pros and cons. I asked a few other Tolkien fans if they wanted to be on this episode, and a lot of them, unfortunately, have kind of shied this away. And it's not necessarily that they don't like older movies or anything. They just have preferences on where the adaption comes through. But for the most part, I have often seen the 78, you know, theatrical picture be pretty well ranked because it just is very stunning animation and well voiced. And I think, to your point, I mean, why it appeals so much, even though it's kind of almost anticlimactic in how it ends, it's just, it really does evoke the book, let alone any kind of good movies idea of the good versus impenetrable evil. And I did see the Hobbit cartoon quite a bunch, either both in school and just from renting. And Return of the King, I think the last time it was ever telecast was probably 06, 07 on one lazy Sunday on Cartoon Network. They always had it in the can. And
yeah.
There's pros and cons in each one. It's like The Hobbit is just a more concise, easygoing, laid back cartoon movie. And while Return of the King, it's got some pretty cool animation, but it feels like it's trying to pick up one too many pieces. And again, the 70s cartoon is a good just kind of popcorn endeavor. It's enough rammed in to where you can almost say, hey, that was epic, you know?
Yeah.
Need to be that.
The thing that a lot of Tolkien fans didn't like is that he changed some things around, like, you know, he to not to confuse people about who the bad guy was.
Correct. He tried to add some suspense. Yeah,
he had Sauron and Saruman, but he took the S off of Saruman and he made him Ahriman. And if you ever see the beginning is more of a, instead of what Peter Jackson did with the third one, where he shows, you know, Smeagol and Deagle fighting over the ring, he actually shows how the ring, you know, came to be, you know, the actual history of the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, you know, then it goes to Bilbo, and then it goes, you know, and then, you know, it starts with the whole, you know, the party bit and all that stuff. So, you know, to me, it's a faithful adaptation.
Especially in the spirit overall. And the orcs are just so creepy. But yeah.
Oh, that gave me freaking nightmares, those orcs.
I saw it made like rank number 90 on online film critics as like one of the best animated movies of all time. So it's got some fanfare, to your point.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tom, feel free to pitch in.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me about the animated movies in particular was just how, I hate to use it because it's not exactly right, but it's the best one I can think of, how photorealistic it was.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see animation like that very often.
No, it's very rare.
No.
And not, even today, you don't. I think the only other film that in that time period that I remember being close to that was Heavy Metal.
Yeah. This is coming around the time when,
yeah.
This is before what we had the wars now, where people had to dispute, do I want to go see something in the theater or get it from my library or video store or my friend's cable, he videotapes it for me and sends me a copy. We're at like the very beginning of this, where people are using, you know, pay channels and stuff is slowly becoming available. You know, 5 years later, stuff slowly starts becoming, you know, put on a thing called VHS, because otherwise you had to just wait for it to be aired as the Saturday or Sunday night, you know, CBS movie.
The animation style is what really sold me, and
it's very vivid. It's very vivid.
That's rotoscoping. Amazing. Rotoscoping. A lot of it was rotoscoping, mm-hmm. where he basically had the guys move around. Supposedly, from what I hear, Billy Barty was in it for some strange reason.
Yeah, and I think some people did die because of the chemicals they used back in the day. But you know that. Not saying that was right, but I'm just not surprised they just had different safety back then.
Yeah. But the rotoscoping was, you know, it's you're shooting live action that's traced on animation cell, which is something, you know, a lot of people, I can remember that being done in Yellow Submarine for some strange reason when they did Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. But that really took me out, you know, like Tom said, it's kind of like the animation blows you out of the water, because no one had ever thought of doing that, you know.
Oh, totally. I see people talk smack all the time about various things, and it's one of those, it's like, well, what would you do differently? Like, you can complain about, you know, something similar, like say the animated segment of Pink Floyd's The Wall. You know, what does that have to do with the rest of the thing? It's just there. That's part of its identity. And you don't have to like it, but it's, you still gotta tip your hat to them trying something very different, and which is still pretty intriguing and you know,
yeah,
eye-catching. You're just like, how did they do that? I want to know how they did that. That's great. And compared to eye candy of probably today, where you're just like, okay, they did that just because it was affordable, not because it was imaginative.
Yeah, back when that set of movies came out, that's when I think animation started to be looked at more of, it took it out of the realm of the Saturday morning fluff into
it's more objective,
hey, actual art.
Yeah.
The only thing I can compare it to is Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns. What that did for the comic book was what these movies did for animation. Oddly enough, I was actually watching some old episodes of Thunder the Barbarian, and there's when they jump on the horses, usually it's almost like a real person jumping on the back of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally.
And the thing was that with Bakshi, he was breaking. You got to remember, he was working on the last season of the original Spider-Man cartoon. So with him, it was kind of like, all right, I'm going to make it trippy in the background, because there are some parts where it's really trippy.
Yeah.
But I'm going to make everything look real. So when you see Aragorn fight off the orcs in Khazad Dûm, you know, it's not going to look like animated orcs that look like, you know, no, those are real people. They've been all drawn and then they've been rotoscoped in. And I think the thing that's amazing is that, and Tom, when you look at Thunder, and you said Thunder the Barbarian, there is this thing where you see actual movements. It's not just herky-jerky. It's actual movement. It's actual people looking at each other and stuff like that. This becomes a live action. It almost takes you, like, you're like thinking, am I watching a cartoon?
Yeah.
Or am I watching live action?
Oh, totally. And this is the right example of style over substance. There's enough substance, yes, but the style is kind of the main star here. Because there's plenty of other movies where you're like, okay, it had a style, but I'll never watch that again because the substance left me with nada. And this is one where it's like, no, I did see this occasionally air on Cartoon Network, but as a whole, by itself, it's, I can totally see people making this part of their animated library, the 78 one, even the original Hobbit. I can totally understand if there's people who have memories watching that when it first aired, and if they like the songs. The story's kind of all over the place in that, but at least it ends in a very coherent manner. You know, they go on a journey, they break into song. It would appeal. They would also, interestingly enough, they kind of all could appeal to a Disney crowd if you wanted to. Even the 78 one, as intense as it gets, it's never, you know, violent to where, you know, you would have to say, okay, I can only show this to 13-year-olds, you know?
Yeah.
Even with, like you say, the creepiness factor, it's still, it's something that could work for all kinds of audiences. There's something for the adults like us who would want to see, you know, something grim and brooding and just very well displayed, good versus evil, and enough for the kids who want to see adventure and love animation. But yeah, to your points, this is a good highlight for Bakshi. It's interesting. Rankin Bass may not look on it as fondly. I know they kind of regretted doing the Return of the King because it just caused more confusion. They always intended to adapt that chapter because they wanted to do a story that begins and ends in an hour. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't think you would even, in many ways, it also, it's a win for everybody. It's cool for 70s cartoon fans. It's cool for fans of the books in some circles. It's also, you know, you wouldn't have gotten any future Lord of the Rings adaptations also. And at the same time, like you say, it's an experimentation. They did it for the world of animation, really, in the end.
The thing I say about the Rankin Bass specials was that they got people that were known to do those voices. Like,
yeah,
if it's Thorin Oakenshield, mm-hmm, you get Henry to do it, you know, and you've got a really great voice in Orson Bean,
and a great voice in John Huston as, you know, Gandalf. And, you know, you have the, you have of all people playing King Thranduil, the elf king. It's who was Otto Preminger.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Otto plays the elf king.
Yes.
And the way they drew all the species, like the humans look human, the hobbits look like hobbits. I don't think the dwarves look like dwarves, but the elves look like alienish, you know? Like they've got like
green goblin, yeah.
No, I wouldn't see, yeah, they kind of look like the green, a lighter version of the green goblin.
Green, yellow, yeah. Yeah.
And the
orcs, I mean, they're supposed to be goblins, but I know what you mean. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
And you have Brother Theodore playing the role of Gollum. That was the creepiest Gollum I can remember. I had the record. I have the records.
Do you really? Nice. They were released by Disney, interestingly enough.
Where is it? Where is my precious? Get chills up the back of my, because Gollum looks like a frog, you know.
Yeah, a giant mutant frog who's he's not gonna eat you, but you feel like he might.
And
for the longest time I thought it was Burl Ives did some of the music, but I was mistaken.
Glenn Yarborough did the songs for the second one, for the Return of the King.
Okay.
Frodo of the Nine Fingers. That Battle of the Five Armies in the end. Okay, we kind of get the idea of what's going on, but they don't. But, you know, you got to realize it was animation. It was, you know, they couldn't show a lot. But you know, the thing I love is,
if you read a book, the book version, you're like, you're getting details of bloodstains on armor and heads being thrown by orcs at the Rohan armies. That's not going to be very cinematic for a TV movie. Sorry.
Like they have in the Return of the King, if anybody's ever seen it, the Witch King has no face. I mean, but he has like two red eyes and he's got a helmet, and his voice done by Don Messick sounds like Darth Vader if he was done by Lewis.
Yes, it was an interesting choice to do that. I do applaud all the black charcoal looking armor and rams that the unstoppable armies use, and they're pretty much all about just how do we conclude this. They also play around more and more with you know, Bilbo going to the dark side than any other version has done, you know, because it was hard to do and end it again in, you know, 90 minutes.
Frodo. Everybody gets them mixed up, don't worry. I do too.
Did I say Bilbo?
You said Bilbo.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Frodo, yeah, the kid, our hero, you know, is like, they go a little harder on this, so kudos to that, on just reminding him, hey, you know, Sam's the real hero. He's got to, you know, save you from the spider and actually make you, you know, get rid of the ring. And the Gollum animation and other orcs do seem to be a little similar to the Rankin-Bass movie, but that's kind of where the parallels kind of end. And they're not really trying to be like each other's animation. They were trying to do their own thing.
And I found out Zance tried to stop the Rankin-Bass stuff to be done.
There was a conflict of interest, and they were able to pivot. They were able to say, we got here first. We got the rights. You had your moment. We had our moment. But I do applaud Warner Brothers for not just burying it in the vault. They have given a DVD and Blu-ray treatment of all three movies. And I mean, it was going to come up anyway. You hate it when studios just want to, again, much like what Disney's been doing half the time, just pretend like stuff doesn't exist. And it's like, no, it's, people are going to want to see it one way or the other, because the new version of whatever is out, they want to see where it all began. And you know, if you were a 70s kid, I mean, that my aunt was big into Tolkien, you know, back in the 70s. And, you know, she was the weird kid who knew about science, who was kind of geeky. And so if you were a kid back in that day, that was all you had. That was the only visual medium you had. Sure, you had Mr. Spock himself, Leonard Nimoy, doing cheesy Tolkien inspired albums, but you know, that wasn't known for being entertained for the right reasons. That you wanted some kind of visual adaptation or companion, and that was what you had back in the day.
Yeah, I want to speak a little bit more about the Rankin Bass approach to animation. One of the things that stuck out to me, and it's something I can kind of remember, but I can't quite remember it so vividly that it sticks out. But they did a lot with the actual. They did a lot with the visual.
Hold up, Tom. Hold up. Okay.
Sorry about that, guys.
No, it's all good. Yeah, you okay?
Yeah. But yeah, what it is too is that you got to think, with this kind of generated a lot of interest for our generation to look at those books.
Yeah,
you know,
it was a win-win. So those who want to know where this began, we're going to probably check out the books that have been around for quite a while, quite a few decades, and then those who wanted the books but wanted to see some kind of adaptation, you know. And even though Star Wars had opened up the door, you know, around the same time, you know, it still took a while for people to say, we can imagine bringing fantasy stuff to life that's more than cowboys or knights in shining armor. It's more than just a formulaic, you know, gotta begin this. And again, just even adjusting the censors even then at that time was still in question. So, you know, it's very intriguing how these all came about, and I don't see how else they could have come about back at that time. You know, Disney wasn't going to do this. You know, it's too dark.
Disney was kind of in their own little pitch at that time too, because you got to remember, Disney was in their own little, you know, gallop at the time, because remember, they were still doing live movies. So with them, it was kind of like, what are we going to do? You know, we got to keep up with this. And that's why they did that movie, The Black Cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was their little answer to, you know, Rankin Bass, actually, you know, take a movie, which ironically had John Hurt playing the villain. But you got to think too, you know, they were doing, you know, the live action stuff was still big with Disney at that time, you know. But this, you know, this kind of made everybody go, oh, see what happens when you sit idly by and watch the world, you know, watch some guy who basically does R-rated and X-rated cartoons take a literary masterpiece and, you know, throw it off.
This is what we got.
But I've always thought to myself, like, Bakshi was probably just sitting there. Bakshi was probably going like, look, I got a great idea. You know, I mean, he kind of took everything. And I know people give the gripe about him smushing everything together, but it makes him more coherent. And he does, if you've ever read the book, remember, Frodo goes for like 10 years. I mean, Bilbo goes away for 10 years before Frodo sees him again.
Oh, totally.
So he does that timeline. He does that timeline where Gandalf disappears, you know. He does that whole thing. And they were showing something. They did a thing where they did a shot-by-shot comparison of what Jackson did and what Bakshi did during the making, when they both did Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and I mean, like you say, people like to focus on the negativity instead of be constructive and what would I have done better or easier. And I mean, they were going to go their separate ways. They were, you know, people communicated by postcard and telephone back in the day. So we didn't have the internet where we'd find about shocking things online and, or just things through friends of a friend. And so it's easy to see how they could both be jealous. They both wanted to be the first one to do it. And at the same time, they both basically got the contracts to do an adaptation of some sort at the same time. And they both did it for different reasons. Rankin Bass, you know, had to keep busy doing TV specials. That was their deal. And Batsky, you know, his last one didn't do as well, even though it was still pretty well liked. And so they both had to keep it fluent. And I agree with you and many others that I think Batsky was probably way more successful. It's just the 78 theatrical is just way more larger than life. You've got great Foley design. You've got still edginess, and it, you know, it, I don't know how else anyone else would have adapted it at the time. They probably would have just gotten to, you know, it, at best, they probably would have done a boring, you know, live theater adaptation that they might have played on local TV. You know, it's just,
I just get the feeling somebody would have gotten it, and then they would have done like an AIP picture, you know,
probably
just a really bad AIP picture, and it would have been like, you know, AIP presents Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring. You know,
right.
It would have been like, you know, you would have had, you know, David Carradine is friggin', you know, you would have had like Christopher Lee as Saruman.
That was what was mind blowing, was how he was wanting to play a part like Aragorn in the original casting.
Yeah,
I can see John Carradine actually doing the music for it. Nightmare in this tear.
You know, I would have actually liked to see him as Gandalf. But
oh God, he would have been great as Gandalf.
He would have been like the one madman classic. Oh yeah, I mean, if you look at that classic Twilight Zone episode, he looks very good.
Yeah, and then I would have had I kept thinking about what's his face, the little short guy, Michael Pollard as Worm Tom. You know, Oliver Reed is Gimli.
I would have been down for that. I could see younger Peter O'Toole probably being Boromir.
Yeah, no, you know who would be great as Peter O'Toole? The King Theoden.
Oh, okay. I'm down with that. That or one of the Elven Kings.
Yeah. You know, Richard Harris is Richard Harris is King the Steward of Gondor, Denethor. You know, totally. you could have had all these people in that movie. It would have been an all-star movie. But the problem that stinks is that, you know, it would have taken a lot of time, a lot of money. Studios probably would have shut down for it. So if you give it to an animator, he'll know what to do. The imagination will be there. If you watch the Helm's Deep sequence, right, in the Lord of the Rings cartoon.
Yeah.
It was groundbreaking. You never thought you'd see that. You know, you never thought you'd see that in your lifetime. Someone would do Helm's Deep, and to have them do the Fires of Isengard, and it's basically just like projectile missiles coming out of, you know, Isengard's, you know, the castle of Isengard. And the thing I love too is Galadriel. That's psychedelic.
Kind of
watch
is,
the scene with Galadriel. If you're on an LSD trip, man, you'll be flipping out on that. But the thing I always laugh at, and Tom, you could agree with me on this, is the not so scary, not so that looks like the thing that Gandalf fights.
Yeah,
the Balrog. Which is basically just a guy in a lion's costume with wings.
Hey,
with a whip.
That was the best they could do at that time, you know.
That's the best they could do. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, then I see Peter Jackson's one, I'm like, holy shit, this thing means business. And I said, and then I think about Bakshi's, I'm like, kind of looks like Monty Python, you know.
The animator had a heart attack.
Yeah. And then the animator suffered a fatal heart attack.
You're right, just like Holy Grail. Oh man.
So where would you rank this? Like if you were looking at this, like overall on the spectrum of, you know, 70s cartoon, which wasn't a lot, but you know, you got to think, you know, when it came out, it did make the money back, right?
Yeah, I would still rank it as just one of the top 70s animated movies. Hobbit,
yeah.
I do have some nostalgia for, but it's going to vary by audience. But the songs are at least worth a listen. Return of the King, you know, you can take it or leave it. It's not really a must see.
Yeah.
There's kind of running out of time and attention at that point.
It was a cute little cartoon, The Return of the King. It was meant for the kids. Mm-hmm. This was meant for the adults, you know. Because with a name like Ralph Bakshi, who'd just done Fritz the Cat and Coonskin and Heavy Traffic and Wizards, you know, and he was just about a couple years away from doing Fire and Ice. Yes. And American Pop and Hey Good Looking. So this is kind of like the midway point for him, you know.
Totally. Any other closing thoughts?
I want to say that I have to go back to just the Rankin Bass approach to animation. That if they weren't doing it, I don't think it would have been done. Or because
it's true, someone Disney had to come wasn't on. Really.
Yeah, it would have taken a lot longer for it to come to fruition with Peter Jackson, if at all. But the thing to me was that their approach to animation was being very detailed, being very focused on making something that was high quality and would stand the test of time. I think back to what they did with Rikki Tikki Tavi. That was always one of my favorite cartoons that they did with Chuck Jones. And it was to me, that's indicative of the way they do things. And even if you want to go back to the holiday specials they did for Christmas and stuff like that, it's still very much the same approach.
Yeah, I can't help but agree with you. It's this like realism that you have with that their stuff, you know. And
I mean, just look at this voice cast. I mean, we had Boris from, you know, Boris and Natasha. You know, Rocky and Bullwinkle was a great independent cartoon. I always thought it was part of the Hanna-Barbera library, but I was mistaken. You know.
Yeah. And you got to think, Tom. You got to think too. Rankin Bass, they were. They had done the Jackson 5. They had done the Osmonds, right?
Yeah, animated inserts for various variety shows.
Kid Power. They did all those, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and whatever, you know, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And, you know, you got to think they made you care about the characters.
Right. Absolutely.
You know.
And in turn, that made the story that much better. You can't have a good story if you don't care about the characters. It's one of the reasons why I have no passion whatsoever for Twilight. I just don't care.
I agree with you. I don't like Twilight. I have no connection with those characters.
It's really amazing what people will try and get into just endless arguments about. It's like, we're saying the same thing, guys. We're saying it different ways. If you're reliant on beautiful people or good looking visuals, at the end of the day, you still end up growing up 10, 20 years later, give or take, and saying, wow, there's just nothing good about what I'm used to like. And yet so many like to just kind of go for the most generic and content and defend it.
If you watch Return of the King with John Huston doing Gandalf, right? And he meets the Witch King, right?
Bellowing voice, talking to him. Yeah.
You know, you're not allowed to be, you know. And then all of a sudden you see the Ride of the Rohirrim before Peter Jackson does that great shot, you know, the 6,000 plus riders on the hill getting ready to take on the orcs. Yes. You see the Rohirrim come out of like this, like hit like this. And it's supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be, they come out of a dirt road.
Yeah. Last minute.
They come. If you read the book, they're led by the wild men through a back pass to this, like, and they come and they charge. And to see it where, you know, it's like they're beating the crap out of the orcs. And then all of a sudden you see the black fleet come up and you're like, oh crap. And then you see the, you know, the standard come out for Gondor, you know, the tree with the seven stars on it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, this works now. This works. You see all the orcs
goblins drowning in the, you know, drowning in the river, you know.
Oh, yeah. They are swimming to their death.
But the thing I didn't like is the end battle.
Yeah, it goes a little, it's a little chaotic
the way it's edited. It's like they're just sitting there and there's like guys throwing bricks down at them.
Yeah, like, it's a little too staticky, which is not what this scene merits. And to your point, you know, this is, you know, they had gotten the contract. They need to finish the job. I know Rick and Bass stated they kind of had regrets about how this turned out. But there is some good art direction, but there is unfortunately also just some transitions. None of the scenes feel like they were made at the same time. So it is a matter of, you know, they're wrapping it up. But it could have used a little more handiwork.
And a lot of it looks like it was shots done over again, too, towards the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some of it, like, you know, it's just not the same amount of care, because like the 78, you know, has an amazing color palette. You instantly believe that it's more than just it has as much care as what was gone into something later on, like a stunning 80s animation like He-Man. You know, it really does feel like it all belongs and it's all very well integrated. And with Return of the King, it felt like they were, you know, they were taking some highlights, you know, as something that anyone could skim read through. And then just the cartoon, just it felt like they had to, I wouldn't be surprised if some surviving animator or kids of this had some extra info on how it's like, we came up with this and it's, we still needed a few additional scenes, you know, to fill the time.
We'll take a shot here, we'll put it here, we'll flip it over, we'll put
have an extra scene of Bilbo and Sam, have another scene of Gandalf giving exposition to the king.
The thing I love about Gandalf's design in those Rankin Bastings, he's almost like Japanimation.
They were doing some Japanese outsourcing at this time, but I don't think they used it for this, but it's a good
It looks like something out of like Battleship Yamamoto or what's the other one?
Let's see, they outsourced on this one.
I think they might have. Oh, and guys, don't forget William Conrad, the guy who played Canon, did the voice of Denethor.
That is awesome. No wonder. Okay, so it does claim country of origin Japan, so they might have done
some
pickups for his various magic moments. And, okay,
no, it's the design. The design looks. The
designs are Japan, and then they're animating it here in America. Okay. Okay. Well, sweet. No, I didn't know about the William Cannon. I saw some of the other guys.
Jake and the Fat Man. All right, Jake and the Fat Man. I'll keep it modern. All right.
I love Cannon. I love him. I love him. Conrad's the band. Otto Preminger. What do you think of? You know, you might know him as a James Bond baddie. What do you think of his?
Otto Preminger was a director. He played Mr. Freeze on Batman.
Batman, oh, yes.
Him. And he was also
okay. So
he's also he's also responsible for the 1968 epic Skidoo with Jackie Gleason.
Oh, jeez. So who am I thinking? There's an Otto or Guts. Okay.
No, don't worry. No, I know who you think you're. I know who you're thinking of. Okay. Shit. The guy, the bad guy from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Okay. Well, shit. Okay. So not Stephen Burko. Okay.
No.
Okay. So Otto Preminger. Yeah, he's a director, but he's making a rare acting role here as Frendal.
Yeah, I love the way he's like, I will have the treasure. And then also it's like, don't you realize there's like Gandalf says, and he's like, well then I guess that means we will both have to fight for what we need. It's like, you know, okay, I'll just change everything, you know, I'll just change my attitude like that, you know. because the thing that's so funny is that, you know, he probably needed them. They probably just wanted his name in there, you know.
Right.
They wanted his name in there. And, you know, you if you're going to have a cast of voices, you're going to have a cast of voices, and you don't want anybody to sound the same. So
okay, maybe the elves are, you know, German expatriates who direct really good movies. You know,
Sovietism.
Anatomy Cold of a War. Murder. And then he, you know, you know, and you got Hans Conry, who was actually working with Dudley Do-Right as I think he was doing Snidely Whiplash, but he was also, you know, a well-known raconteur and, you know, an actor too. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he was in there playing Thorin Oakenshield.
Yes. And that was a great voice, especially having just read the book and like, whoa.
Thorin. Yeah. And
that's a glooming voice.
The thing I love about that is they did the song of the dwarf song.
Mm-hmm. The song what they're singing when they're going through the mines. That's
no, when they're in Frodo's house.
And they talk sang about that, but there was another song that the goblins sing.
Yeah. Trying to think. Because my mind's a little shaky on this, because I've only seen The Hobbit like once or twice. But the thing I love is like they sing that song of the lonely, you know, the burning trees.
Yes.
And Peter Jackson took that and did that in The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey.
Mm-hmm.
He did that as a tribute to that cartoon, you know.
Totally.
So, yeah. So,
I mean, and that says a lot for when, you know, he was adapting it to begin with. And a lot of people thought, hey, you know, you should make it like Willow. And he's like, well, no offense, I don't think Willow's a good movie. I want to make it more like Braveheart. And so it is interesting just seeing all how the development came about for any of these visions. You know, they were not easy to translate, and they were not easy to communicate to people. And as so many, it could have gone way more uglier than any other franchise where all the different sequels are owned by different property owners, you know? So it's interesting how it all unleashed. It all came out at this time and everyone got their moment in the sun.
And you guys think too, you know, Rankin Bass, traditional, family oriented, you know. Yes.
And this is interesting looking at this. They were sold off to Lorimar Television. And
yeah. Ralph Bakshi, you know, he does dirty comic book. He does dirty movies involving animation.
Yeah. He was Adult Swim before it was.
Yeah. So that's the way I look at it, you know.
And he basically just wanted to make a more mainstream approach, but still have his signature all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
it's hard to do that, to do a movie that might be for a bigger audience, but not compromise your integrity as an artist.
Ooh, I meant to tell you, do you guys remember a Super Friends episode where they did a play on the Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
I don't recall this.
Mal Havoc.
I have the episode on DVD. It was one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah. They have the ring. They turn the Super Friends into hobbits. And it turns out there's a guy named Mal Havoc.
Oh, okay. Yes. I think I do.
And the ring, he has a ring, and they have to take the ring. So Hanna-Barbera got in on it too a little bit, you know, with that episode.
That's so wild. Very neat. Man, yeah, you know, and you know, so many other movies and shows, sci-fi and fantasy most notably, would, you know, loosely pay homage to it or do their own version of it. It's just, this is where it became kind of the norm. Everyone's got to, you know, even do their version of something that they love, especially if they don't have the right to adapt it at that moment.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I would have actually liked to see Adam West as the voice of Saruman.
you know who I'd love to have seen do the voice of Saruman if they were doing a
Cesar cartoon. Romero?
Cesar Romero, yeah. But to have a guy throwing orange wedges at his ass, you know?
Bam. Slang. Kaboom. There you go. Yeah. Do a kid-friendly version of Lord of the Rings with the...
No, you guys know that story, right? That Cesar Romero
I've heard Blackie stories, but...
I heard this on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast, and God forgive me if I repeat it and it's wrong, but reportedly he used to have three or four guys go into his trailer. He'd pull his pants down and throw orange wedges at his ass.
Some weird fetish we should know about.
Frankie Valli, they had Frankie Valli on, and they asked him, but I said, I don't remember that. He says, I remember I went to a strip club with Cesar Romero, but I don't remember anything else like that. You know, he's like, yeah, supposedly that's the big rumor, you know.
Maybe your crew member just saw him with his pants down.
He got the idea of hanging up with Danny Thomas.
or the infamous Pat McCormick helicopter rides. Did I tell you guys that one?
I thought we did.
I believe you did.
Yeah.
You want me? I'm not going to remind you because it's
wacky.
It's wacky, but that was Pat McCormick, you know, the way he did things. But yeah, you think Lord of the Rings kind of like, it was like that whole thing of like the 70s, you know, the 60s, you know, it kind of...
People actually read books and wanted to adapt them versus, well, this has been in our, you know, locker. This has been in our safe for 30 years. We better adapt it because now the heat's on, now because we're going to lose the rights and we don't want to, you know, lose that said property.
And... not only that, but like, you know, they wanted to bring it, you know, the only way we could do it back then was bring it to animation, you know.
Yeah, it was just better. You didn't have to worry about effects because people would often just tell you, no, no, we're not going to give you that much for that explosion or that cartoon. And you know how it was. I've been looking at a great special on Disney Plus on Industrial Light and Magic, and you know, a lot of the stuff I was already familiar with, having read, you know, looked at all the special features and looking at numerous film history books, but they really went in deeper, showing new exclusive clips and how, again, you know, the animators were separate from the practical, and then they slowly integrated. You know, they would scan the models in, and they would still utilize each other's talents instead of just say, well, we're retiring you, or, you know, you guys do that, we'll match it up later. It's very interesting now what, you know, even though everything's still mostly all CGI, some people can still do it well. And I'm glad that the live action Lord of the Rings were able to use Rhythm and Hues and Weta's workshop. And as well as, for again, both these animators got a shot at it and brought their own special voice to it. And
yeah.
It's a rarity. I think a lot of people now, again, you know, there still is outsourcing, but sometimes animation seems to be an afterthought unless it's a Pixar cartoon, which is a shame because, you know, there's so many people now who have shown that they can do a cool flash animation on YouTube that's eye-catching and not, you know, a generic South Park, you know, wannabe. So I can only hope that some person somewhere wants to do a new indie animation company and finds their own formula.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you if somebody will one day.
And if they want to crowdfund it, and that's the whole, you know, catch 22, well, so be it. Let's do that. But somebody's got to pull the lever. This has been Delight, as always. You guys rule.
Yeah, I was going to say that it takes at least a 2 or 3 decades for somebody to say, you know what, we should do something cool like this. And so I wouldn't expect anything like this for releasing their stab at the Lord of the Rings until probably 2030, 2040.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Or at least do another inspired animation. Just do whatever you can't do. Do another medieval fantasy thing. You know, there's plenty of them out there, like Mists of Avalon and other stuff. And unfortunately, people seem to just want to mix in fantasy with sci-fi still. They just can't get beyond it. Everything's got to be Hunger Games, or it's got to be a knockoff of a knockoff. And I'm glad this didn't go the Empire Pictures route, as much as I like those guys.
I always say this, if they're going to do another one, you know, you wait, and Tom's right, you wait a couple of years and then you take it from there. But I think if they do another one that's animated, they're going to put more in there, like Tom Bombadil, you know, the guard who helps Pippin or Mary and in Gondor, the arrival of the armies of Gondor, you know, with, you know, the Prince Imrahil of Dol Amroth, you know, all the stuff that was in the book that left out of the movies.
Yeah.
That we want to see again. This is what we want to see. We want to see this, and this, because it would be great to see that, you know.
Here's my pitch to you. How about they explore the first Balrog during the first stage, let alone all the other wizards? Because
yeah,
the books hint at them, who may or may not have gone to the dark side, who may have been killed by Saruman or the other dark forces. But it's for a while, he's just like, there's got to be other wizards besides just Gandalf here that exactly. is keeping the forces of evil at bay, or eventually falling victim to it, because even the ring can conquer them.
Yeah, there's a lot of material left to deal with.
Tolkien had an idea. Lord of the Rings. I wish we could be inside his brain before he passed.
Yeah, or at least get an idea of where he would have liked to have gone with it. See if there were any notes to kind of guide the way. But overall, though, even if you went that route and got his notes and you raised my perfectly, it would still pale in comparison because of what Tolkien brought to the table with the story itself.
It engaged our imagination.
Do create a language.
Yeah, you would have to have basically 20 different Tolkien experts, get them into a room, and they would have to be on set every day, basically working one-on-one with the writers. The writers can write, you know, again, the sword play and the establishing shots, but they got to basically be supervising the dialogue. And eventually, if you're going to go your own way with this, you still got to be kind of, you know, it's just like with any other franchise, when you do a new take on it, you got to basically be supervising each other without getting in each other's face and, you know, mm-hmm. micromanaging each other. And that's what I'm always afraid of when anyone does any expensive project, you know, is everyone getting along? Do people want to come to work today? Do
this? Yeah. And the thing with 20 different Tolkien experts is you're probably going to get at least 60 different opinions.
Yeah. And so it might even make better sense to do others' takes on the Silmarillion or just all the poems, and just basically is like, okay, I write this episode, next person, you write this episode with this crew, you know, and just split them up. Don't rough each other's feathers. It doesn't even necessarily have to have continuity of the other. It would just kind of like the Animatrix or any of these other animated anthology tales. I noticed they've been doing it with just about every other franchise. You could definitely do that. A Tolkien inspired anthology, title it whatever you want.
Yeah, the Animatrix 2.
Tolkien's Matrix. Well, now that's just gotten going. Oh man, you could hire some of the guys that did maybe stuff like Akira or Ghost in the Shell. I'd be down for that.
To be honest, like he said, even though there was at least some part of the 70s movie done in Japan, I would like to see them go full bore with it. To say, okay, here's the source material. Do it. You guys are the anime experts. Do it.
Run with it.
If the final battle ends up with giant robots, you know what? They end up with giant robots.
Man. Once again, delight having you both on here. I admire how you're able to just all kind of just do some fun get-togethers and keep your high spirits up in this chaotic time. So
actually, the reason why we do that is because we absolutely hate each other.
Yeah, man. I should have known, man. I'm walking.
Didn't you get my memo?
I was too busy looking at 20 other complaints.
I have a good authority that JJ is a known homo sapien who has hung out with thespians.
Allegedly.
No, they're actual thespians. I saw them do their work. And
yeah, well, and I was there when Kennedy was shot, so.
You were the guy on the grass, you know, weren't you?
Yeah, I was responsible for pulling all the strings.
Lesbian? I didn't know she was from the Middle East.
Oh!
Funny, she didn't look Jewish.
Thank you all Tolkien fanatics and animation buffs for listening. We hope you actually enjoyed listening as much as we did recording this.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.